From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to this remarkable program we call Coast to Coast AM. Later tonight, those open lines. Here's what's happening. The family of Otto Warmbier rebuked President Donald Trump for siding with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, who denied knowledge of their son's maltreatment during his imprisonment. He eventually died. After a second summit with Kim in Vietnam, President Trump said he does not hold the North Korean dictator responsible for Warmbier's death. The president weighed in again on Twitter on Friday today, arguing that he was being misinterpreted after successfully getting Warmbier out of North Korea and professing to hold the country accountable for Warmbier's death, though he did not mention Kim's role. Otto Warmbier was a University of Virginia student when he was detained back in 2016 during a brief sightseeing tour of the reclusive state. He was held captive by the North Korean regime for more than a year before being released back to the United States in June of 2017. Then the 22-year-old Warmbier returned home to Ohio in a vegetative state, blind, deaf, and having sustained severe brain damage from his time in detention. He died on June 19th of 2017, days after the Trump administration had secured his return. Very sad story. Amazon is planning to open its own grocery stores in the United States at a lower price point than Whole Foods. They're planning to open dozens of stores, with the first opening in Los Angeles as early as the end of this year. More bad news for retailers. The retail apocalypse is alive and well this week, with major chains such as Gap, JCPenney, Victoria's Secret, and Foot Locker all announcing massive closures, totaling the death of more than 465 stores over the last 48 hours. Michael Mish Shedlock, registered investment advisor, with us. Well, the sales are happening, Mish. It's just that things are going to the internet.
Exactly, George. But if you look at store openings versus closings, we're on a huge pace here for closings. That's going to force these malls to try and rent out that space. It's going to be at lower prices. I'm looking at the number of stores that Walmart is opening. Down, down, down. I mean, these are big malls. These are the key stores that holds the malls together. We have more evidence in here too, George, about what I was talking about retail spending in general. The Atlanta Fed GDP Now model came out today. It's estimating GDP growth for the first quarter of 2019 at 0.3%. We are just barely above recession territory here of going negative. The data is incomplete, though, George. Because of the government slowdown, we have spending data from December, but we have income data that goes to January. But here's the picture. Income is up, spending is down. That matches what I see across the board. And one of the reasons why income was up was because we had special dividends, and we also had farm payments trying to keep the farmers, you know, from going under because of the tariffs that Trump had. I am looking at a severely weakening picture here for the U.S. economy. George, I'm ready for spring, but the economy doesn't seem like it's ready.
Oh, boy. We'll take a look. Thanks, Mish. Appreciate it. Have yourself a good weekend. SpaceX's Crew Dragon capsule will make its debut when it launches atop a Falcon 9 rocket from Kennedy Space Center in just a few hours. Dubbed Demo 1, the launch from Kennedy Space Center's historic launch complex 39A is scheduled at 2:49 a.m. Eastern Time Saturday morning. Most famously, the launch pad was used back in 1969 to send the Apollo 11 astronauts to the moon. What's up in the skies beyond just that? Let's check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Hi, Peter.
Good evening, George, and you've done me a great service apprising me of that launch out of Cape Canaveral, Cape Kennedy.
Oh, you'll get calls on that one.
I always get calls. and sometimes I'm not up to date, so they catch me unaware. But I'm off gallivanting at a conference in Ocean Shores, Washington this weekend, and as fate and Murphy's Law would dictate, I left my stack of reports for this report tonight on my desk when I took off, so I'm going to have to do this one from memory.
All right, let's ad lib it, kid.
My first report comes from Birmingham, Alabama. A gentleman reports that on Monday, February 18th, President's Day, he and his wife were lying in bed talking when his wife sat bolt upright suddenly and said, "What in heaven's name is that?" Her husband glanced out the window and was greeted by a most peculiar sight. He saw a prominent light moving across the sky at a fairly good clip, but it was distinctly red on the top and orange on the bottom, almost as if two lights either touching or connected to one another. Very interesting, very strange sighting. As they watched that first one, thinking it was the only one they were going to see, his wife looked back at the point of the sky where this object had first appeared, and she said, "Here comes another one." Well, he looked there, and there was a second one, identical in appearance to the first one, he reports to me, moved across the sky, apparently in the same flight path that the first one had followed. Very, very unique sighting. And here's where it gets really interesting, George. The husband is a retired senior special agent for the FBI.
Wow, how about that?
You couldn't have a better witness than those two people.
X-Files come alive with him, huh?
Yep. And that report is posted to our website. It's accessible from our homepage. You can link, go directly to that report. You know, if people read nothing but one report tonight, I hope it's that one. Second report comes from Millinocket, Maine. I've been there on my way to Mount Katahdin, actually, to hike on that, the highest mountain in Maine. A woman reports that on the, this is a week ago tonight, the 23rd of February, Saturday night, she and her husband were out walking their dogs when they were, their attention was drawn to an object moving very rapidly across the sky. It was egg-shaped, it was oval, and it was about the size of a full moon, so very prominent in the sky. As it streaked horizontally across the sky, they could detect a very faint, very thin trail of smoke or some kind of aerosol being released behind it. Very worthwhile report. That one is also posted to our website and linked to from our homepage. The final report comes from Canada. Little Lorraine, the city of Little Lorraine in Nova Scotia, again, February 23rd, the same date as the report I just described, within 15 minutes or so of the report from Millinocket, husband and wife also out walking their dogs, when they became aware of also a self-luminous object moving across the sky. But the thing that caught their attention was that its color changed, distinctly changed, from bright red to orange back to bright red. Its velocity also changed, speeding up at one point, and its flight path across the sky changed. So I can't imagine that it would have been a meteor or an aircraft or any kind of drone or quadcopter. The interesting thing about all three of these reports, in my opinion, George, is the fact that only one or two people were witness to them. Where are all the other witnesses who must have seen these objects at the same time in the same location, but they haven't come forward to report them? Also, just in closing, a couple of interesting reports about loud sounds emanating from the atmosphere. People, one of them from Phoenix, I think about a week or 10 days ago, and I got a report from a woman whose father had been a B-52 pilot in the U.S. Air Force, and on his deathbed several years ago, he reported to her that he had actually been in a captured flying saucer and had tried to fly it or had flown it. That report is posted to our website for people's enjoyment.
Super, and I'm going to see you in 3 weeks in Everett, Washington, my friend.
Oh, it's going to be fun, George.
By the way, we are so sold out. Your interview couch, I'm going to have to give away to someone. You'll have to do it standing.
Okay.
All right, thanks, Peter. Thanks. Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Up next, he's back, our horror host, Mr. Lobo, on Coast to Coast AM. Well, he's back, Mr. Lobo, the host of the late-night movie program Cinema Insomnia, a cult sensation for more than 14-plus years. Also stars as the amazing Criswell in the film Plan 9. He lords over the late-night slumber party fun with his patented blend of humor, satire, and spookiness. Mr. Lobo is the MC also for film festivals like Blobfest and provides background on films with comedy, games, and prizes. And here he is back on Coast to Coast as we talk about some films and movies and things like that. Mr. Lobo, hi there.
Greetings, George. As you can tell, I am giddy as a schoolgirl. I'm very excited to find out that I've just been nominated for the Rondo Hatton Classic Horror Award in two categories, both as favorite horror host and as the for our event Blobfest, as best fan event, which
How
is celebrating
cool.
its 20th anniversary of the event this year. 61st anniversary of the Blob, 20th anniversary.
Oh, congratulations. We'll talk a little bit more about that. Hey, did
Excellent.
You have a chance to watch the Oscars?
I did not.
They had it without a host this year, and the ratings went up 12 to 16% from a year
wow.
ago. Without a host.
Without a host, because they just got right to it.
They went right to it. They had a voice announcer, and everybody just did their thing. It was weird. They should have had a robot doing it.
I was not very excited about the Oscars this year, so it was actually the first time I hadn't watched it all in a long time.
Yeah, they didn't have those gangbuster films that we're used to watching anymore.
No.
But speaking of films, what's happening in your world?
Gosh, there's so many things going on. You know, I mean, we're still doing the Cinema Insomnia. We actually had to, we had a hard drive crash, so we lost like five episodes.
No. Permanently?
Permanently, yeah.
Oh,
they
geez.
Sent it to Go Texas.
Back.
They had the guys who do the FBI recovery, you know, the guys who can get anything.
Anything
off the
from anything, yeah.
Destroyed. They couldn't get anything. We sent it back to the manufacturer. They couldn't get anything. So we literally had to reshoot five episodes. And, you know, you think it's hard to do the first time, but to have to do the same exact thing all over again.
That's tough.
I think the mental block was the worst part. Actually, after we shot it, everything turned out great, actually better than before. But, you know, getting over that mental hurdle of just accepting that all that material is lost. I miss tape. I miss film. I miss having that permanence of, okay, we've got it. Good. You know?
That's right. It's here. And you can always dub it onto other VCRs
exactly.
and stuff like
you know,
that.
We had, you know, we were shooting in 4K, so you know, the plan was to back it up and then back up the backup, but it failed before we got a chance to do that.
Are horror movies, Mr. Lobo, as spooky as they used to be in the past?
You know, I think they're getting better, honestly. I think there's more variety of them. You know, I think that, you know, there have been a few in the past few years that actually have some atmosphere, because there is a difference between, you know, there's different grades of horror movies. There's some movies that are shock and awe, some movies that are gory, some movies that are, but there are some movies that are spooky. You know, in the 50s, they had a lot of really spooky movies that had true atmosphere to them. And like Creature from the Black Lagoon and It Came from Outer Space. And it's like there was such a concentration on creating an atmosphere. And I'm glad to see that, you know, there are some movies that I think are kind of taking a different pace with these films. I saw A Quiet Place. I thought that was good. I thought, you know, I like the Insidious movies. There are some current ones that I feel like, you know, take you somewhere and are fun.
Do you think stars of the past could make it today? People like John Wayne, Bing Crosby, and all those, you know, Gene Kelly and his musicals. Things have changed.
Things have changed. Yeah, they have changed, you know, but, you know, things go in cycles. I'd like to see another John Wayne. I'd like to see another Bing Crosby. You know, I'd like to see some people who are larger than life, you know. I mean, reality's cheap. I get it every day. I'd like to see some people that I could really admire.
But I don't think people want to see war movies anymore or Westerns. I think that genre seems to be gone.
Hateful Eight I thought was good, and I think that there are some Westerns that drop every once in a while and some war movies that drop every once in a while, but certainly, you know, every genre that hits really hard, I think they drive it, Hollywood just drives it into the ground. You know, they made 10 trillion Westerns in the 50s and 60s and just burned it out, and I think that they did the same with zombie movies. Now nobody wants to see zombie movies anymore because it's cliched, you know.
I think John Wayne was almost in every one of those Westerns, too.
And every one of those war movies.
Yeah, at the same time. How long have you been a horror host?
17 years. I like the idea of it being 14, though. I'd like to go back a few years, but yeah, it's we've been doing it. This is our 17th season. We started at an ABC affiliate in Sacramento, California.
Have you loved every moment of it?
Absolutely. It's the worst best job or the best worst job in the world. You never want to quit because, you get to watch movies. You get to tell jokes. You get to be a performer, a writer, a producer. You make all the phone calls. You build all the props. You get on the ground and you draw cartoons. And you just get to do everything. And I like that aspect of it.
Did you think in the older days most local markets had their own horror host? And I cite that because with me, growing up in Detroit, we had Morgus, who remains a dear friend of ours.
Morgus the Magnificent.
Yes. We also had Sir Graves Ghastly, who
was
a vampire.
Too, in his own
But did it every market, like Los
almost
Angeles, New York,
market,
Chicago,
yes,
have a horror host?
Almost every market. The shock package, Screen Gems bought the Universal films. So all the Universal movies, the greats, came to television, Son of Frankenstein and King Kong and all that stuff. And once that stuff hit television, they thought that, when we have a turkey, we want to keep our ratings up, so we need a host. It's like a radio DJ or a good radio host,
yeah.
Right? But keep no matter what the topic is, they're listening to George every week because you're their guy. And that's kind of how the horror host functions, is that people watch the movies whether they're good or bad or whether it's their favorite movie or not, because they just want to be part of the fun and they want to spend Saturday with their guy. And so they thought that would be a good way to keep their advertising rates up. And I think that most stations bought these packages. They had about 56 movies in them. And there were a lot of variations. Sometimes it was just a spooky voice. There was one called Lord Telford, I think, where it was just a spooky voice. I forgot what market that was, but there was somewhere it was just an animation that just sort of tied everything together. And there were some that of course, like in Florida, there was M.T. Graves and there was Dr. Madblood in Virginia and Vampira in, mm-hmm. in L.A. and Zachary in New York. He was Roland in Philly first, and then he was Zachary in New York. And, so it was a national phenomenon that happened locally. And so there was a lot of pride because, you drive by the TV station and you'd think, oh, wow, Count Spooky is in there.
Yeah,
taping
exactly.
His show for Saturday night, and he might say my name on the air or mention my birthday.
What they also used to do is I used to remember when we were the Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts, and when there were the Girl Scouts and everybody in school, they would all go to the taping and become part of the program.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was better than Howdy Doody.
I remember when Bozo the Clown was doing a show in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
We had our own local Bozo the Clown, I guess.
Sure, of course.
And there were a whole bunch of kids there, and it was live. And Bozo called this one kid up and said, so what do you think of this? And he did a few little profanities on the air.
Oh, man. Wow.
And Bozo went, let's go to a commercial.
I love your Bozo voice.
But,
they're bringing Bozo back.
It's are they?
Time show. Yeah, they're doing it. They're bringing Bozo back. So I don't know the full details, but it was announced just a few days ago that they're going to try and do a brand new live Bozo show. Count Gordeval, who was the host of Creature Feature in the D.C. area, he was not only the horror host on Saturday night, but he was Bozo Monday through Friday, and he was Captain Cosmic, Captain 20 in the afternoon. So he had a three-way job of being the afternoon host for the older kids, the kiddie show host for the Bozo host for the little kids, and then the horror host on the weekends for the teenager.
Indeed. When we take calls next hour with Mr. Lobo, in addition to your questions, share with us your local horror host, if you can remember, that you had at your local television station, who that person was and what they did. And they all played these great black and white movies, didn't they, Mr. Lobo?
They did, but, you know, of course, in the beginning, all the movies were black and white until people had color televisions, which wouldn't be until the later 60s.
That's a good point. We're going to take this quick break. We're with Mr. Lobo talking about horror films right here on Coast to Coast AM. Our news editor of Coast to Coast AM, our website is none other than the wonderful Tim Banal, and he's got some great stories posted up there right now, including an incredible story about an ice throne. There's somebody on it floating away out to sea, and then the Denver airport doing some strange things, Tim, with gargoyles. What are they doing?
Oh, we've got some real wild stuff for you, George, this week. Well, I guess we'll start with the Denver airport. That's up in the number two spot in the carousel.
Yeah.
As you may know, and the Coast listeners may know, Denver Airport has sort of this reputation as being an alleged hub for the Illuminati and reptilian aliens. It sort of has a place in conspiracy lore ever since it opened 25 years ago. And it was always sort of urban legend and stuff like that, an in-joke among people that worked there. But in the last few years, the Denver Airport's leaned in to their reputation as a hub of conspiracy theory stuff. And so they've done a bunch of different things over the last few years, but the most recent one, and the folks going to the Coast website really dig this a lot, it's in the number two spot. It's a gargoyle. They originally have these gargoyle statues there, so they took the gargoyle statues out and replaced them with an animatronic version, a lookalike, that when people walk by, it suddenly comes to life.
Oh.
Chatting them up. Yeah, yeah.
And I'm at the airport every month doing our Beyond Belief shows, so I can't wait to look for this thing.
Oh, nice. Yeah, you definitely got to check it out. You should get a picture next to the talking gargoyle.
I will. We'll put it up on the website. Sure thing.
The other crazy story this week that came up today, and it's in the number one spot at the website, I was completely blown away by this one. Luckily, it has a happy ending. This woman from Texas, she's on vacation in Iceland with her family, and she's at a popular beach, and she sees this iceberg, this piece of ice that looks like a throne, and people are having their picture taken on it. So she goes and sits on it, and all of a sudden a wave comes, and it shakes up the iceberg and breaks it free. It's just a little piece of ice, breaks it free into the water, and she starts to float away. And you can see the first picture, which is the great picture that she wanted. That's in the number one spot. When you click the link and go to the article, scroll down, you can see her slowly floating away. Luckily, someone ran out and saved her, and we can all kind of laugh about it now.
I love it. Keep doing it, Tim. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, George.
Tim Banal, he is our expert and our news editor of the coasttocoastam.com website. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're back with Mr. Lobo. We'll take your calls next hour. Share with us some of your horror stories, if you will, your favorite movies, and, of course, tell us if you had a horror host in your local television market. Mr. Lobo, what is it about horror films that people just love? They want to get scared.
Of course, people do want to get scared. I think for a lot of us, I think some of it's a rite of passage in the beginning. You know, I mean, I know that I watched those movies just so I could hang out with my dad. You know, he was watching those movies late at night on TV.
I was the same way. My dad liked sci-fi films and would take me to the movie house. He didn't like to go alone. My mom didn't like them. I would go with them. You know, we would see all those horror things, the Mysterians, all those movies.
Oh, yeah. You know, and I mean, half the time, you know, I was on the edge of my seat or ready to hiding under the furniture. And it was kind of a rite of passage. And I do think it's like a roller coaster. People just, you know, it's a thrill. And it's at the end of it, all you get brought back home safe and you survived it. And I think that's the thing. And I think it's a horror that we can control. And in the end of the day, we can walk away from, you know, whereas, you know, the stuff that's happening in the news and the stuff that's happening in real life is, you know, we don't ultimately have any control over it, but a movie or a comic or anything, you can feel brave in this fantasy world.
When I was a kid, I went and saw the original House on the Haunted Hill.
Oh, man.
God, that was scary. Oh.
We did that live, George, with all the gimmicks.
Did you?
the registered nurses in attendance, and we had all these amplified sound effects, and we had a skeleton coming down on a wire over the audience, and I had my puppet master rig on where I'm turning the crank and making the skeleton come out. It was great. It was a blast.
What would you say was for you personally, your all-time favorite horror film?
That's really tough, George.
It is tough because they're all good.
Opinion. They're all, as far as the classics, I don't know why, but I really love The Invisible Man. I really get a charge out of it. I think that the performance of Claude Rains and his voice and the fact that you don't see him at all, and it scared me so bad when I was a kid because, you know, the main character is invisible from the start of the movie, so it's just that voice, that creepy voice throughout the whole thing. Son of Frankenstein and The Blob, of course. You know, I mean, I'm the MC of Blobfest, and that's by no accident. I absolutely love The Blob. And the later films, you know, I mean, I think Alien is a really scary film. I think that there are some modern ones that are really, truly great and are scary. I never really was a much of a fan of I never liked The Exorcist or any of those ones. I think that those ones are a little too...
Were they too corny for you?
I don't know. I just feel like they're not as fun. You know, I kind of like a little more fantasy in my horror films. You know, I mean, I think, you know, Return of the Living Dead is fun, and you know, all the zombies and monsters. You know, when it's people getting possessed, it's fine. You know, my wife loves all those exorcism movies, but that's just not my bag.
Let me throw some movies your way and give me your critique, okay?
Okay.
The Shining.
A classic. Love it. Fantastic movie. Scary, still holds up. New generation of fans find it over and over again. Does not follow the book at all. There's not even twins in the book. He's killing people with a croquet mallet in the book. But this is, I believe, probably one of the few instances where I feel the movie is superior to the book.
Starring Jack Nicholson. Came out in 1980, I believe.
Yes, 1980. Shelley Duvall was marvelous in the picture. Scatman Crothers was good in the picture. I mean, just stellar performances, a chilling Stanley Kubrick in his prime. You know, I feel like it's a classic.
1996, The Scream.
The Scream, yes. You know, Scream was good. I mean, definitely what I liked about Scream was that it kind of acknowledged all of these cliches from all the previous horror movies and actually created a rule book. It's like, okay, get six teenagers together. And they pretty much broke down all the rules of all the slasher movies of the 80s and made fun of them, which I thought was fun. It had some satirical qualities to it.
1982, Poltergeist.
Poltergeist is fantastic. Toby Hooper, who did the original Texas Chainsaw, and Steven Spielberg, of course, of Close Encounters and everything else. Those two together, I think, created something that had heart, had atmosphere, genuine scares. And ghost movies are hard because usually what happens in ghost movies is in the last act it falls apart because once you discover the mystery as to why their ghosts are there, the mystery is the thing that makes it strong, and once the mystery is solved, it kind of loses its mystique and its power. Whereas Poltergeist doesn't quite do that. You know, the last act is really strong and exciting, and that no one could predict the climax of that movie, and whatever that thing is still with them and still following them, and we don't really truly understand it, which makes it much more scary.
Number 1968 year, Rosemary's Baby.
Rosemary's Baby. William Castle wanted to direct that, our House on Haunted Hill producer, and because he had such a reputation with gimmicks, they had Roman Polanski do it because they wanted to make a serious picture.
Wasn't Mia Farrow in that one?
Mia Farrow was in it, and it ended up, you know, I believe winning the Oscar. And
yeah.
I believe, they did get the prestige they wanted to make that film work. And, you know, his eyes. What have you done to his eyes?
Aha. I think she was married to Sinatra at that time, too.
Probably.
Right around there.
Yeah. She had that mod haircut. Everyone was trying to look like her. It's
not classic.
One of my faves, but it's definitely a solid movie and a classic.
2018, one I did not see, Hereditary.
I did not see it.
You didn't see that either. That's supposed to be pretty good.
She enjoyed it. She said it was good. I haven't seen it yet, but I do plan on watching it. I think from all I've heard, it's very well done.
73, The Exorcist.
Again, not my bag, but definitely
a classic
movie. And there are, what's neat about The Exorcist is to look for the subliminal messages in that movie. There are a couple placements of a ghoulish face, just one frame. And if you look for it, it's there. And that, I think that punctuates a lot of the scares in that movie, or some of those subliminal effects.
1984, A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Nightmare on Elm Street. You know, when I saw that, I saw it right after Dreamscape. And I thought, oh, these guys are just ripping off Dreamscape. Do you remember that movie?
Yep.
We're trying to assassinate the president through his dreams. I thought that was a brilliant script. I like Dreamscape better, but, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street gave us Freddy Krueger, which is probably one of our more enduring modern monsters.
1978. God, I can't believe it was that long ago. Halloween.
Oh, my goodness. I love the originally titled The Babysitter Killers. John Carpenter's kind of breakthrough film. He had done Assault on Precinct 13 before, I believe. But Halloween definitely is a modern classic. I think the remake that they did, or the reboot, or I don't know what you want to call it, the thing they did that came out last year was fantastic. Truly great performances by Jamie Lee Curtis. And
she was in the original, too, wasn't she?
Yeah. Jamie Lee Curtis was in the original, and she was in this one that came out last year. And it was interesting the way that they sort of ignored the whole rest of the series, and basically just this happens basically 40 years after the first one, and in the new one, it kind of shows what that event did to both of them, and how they kind of both became dependent on each other, or almost that they're not, I don't know if they're the same person. It's kind of interesting how they kind of tied those two characters together in the new one. I don't want to spoil it, but the original, of course, is just a classic. You know, it's the campfire tale of the babysitter alone in the house with this serial killer on the loose, and the mask, which was terrifying, is really just William Shatner's face.
2012, one I don't remember, The Cabin in the Woods. Do you remember that one?
Yes. I saw it at the drive-in, believe it or not.
Was it a good one?
Yes, it was a lot of fun. You know, it was another one like Scream, where they kind of are poking fun at all the cliched horror films of the 80s. But what was interesting is that there was not really a conspiracy, but there was a government-funded kind of experiment where they are deliberately doing these different things to these kids who go out into the woods and get murdered in these dumb movies. So there's this whole underground base where there's all these different monsters and serial killers and demons and everything you can think of in cages waiting to be released in these experiments. It was really funny. The humor of it was great, because for the guys working in this government installation, it was just another day at the office where they're torturing these teenagers, you know, and it was funny. It was very self-aware and funny.
And the last one we'll talk about here, 1968, hard to believe, 51 years ago, Night of the Living Dead.
It's the one that changed everything, you know. I mean, before that, zombies were always, you know, voodoo zombies. And this kind of basically transformed the whole zombie genre. You know, there would be no Walking Dead without Night of the Living Dead. And it is truly a classic. I think it had some poignancy with what was happening in the 60s and civil rights and how there was kind of a revolution happening. And I think there were a lot of parallels with that, where our whole society was turned inside out by the events of the 60s, and I think Night of the Living Dead definitely reflects that. I think that and the cynicism, I mean, the that ending is just a downer.
It sure was. What's new with the Mr. Lobo movie?
Mr. Lobo movie, well, it's very bizarre. I met with a cinematographer. We were going to try to make our Halloween special a little more special this year. I wrote a Werewolves and Witches special, and when he read the script, he said, you know, I think there's a Mr. Lobo movie in this. What if we just not show a movie and just expand this to feature length? So that we're going to try and do that this year, and I'm very excited about it.
And some of your shows are on Roku, aren't they?
Oh, yes. I have my own channel. It's called OSI 74. A lot of kind of cheesy UHF kind of stuff on there. And Cinema Insomnia, there's two seasons of Cinema Insomnia up there right now with more to come. And so we're just, streaming has been good for us. We've got a whole new audience, about 150,000 plays a month. So we're excited about the world of streaming because I think it's a good way to find people.
We're going
to
take calls next hour with Mr. Lobo, including your thoughts on your local horror host in your city. Do these local markets have these horror hosts anymore? I think they're all gone.
Sven Gulli is definitely one of the big ones, and he is in Chicago.
Where's Elvira? Is she still around?
MeTV. Elvira's still around. She does specials and stuff, and she'll host a string of films around Halloween time, but she's no longer in syndication like she was before.
I think we had her on about 10 years ago or something.
But there are lots of them still around. It's just, unfortunately, there's Marlena Midnight. She's in Idaho. There's a lot of them spread out. It's just that broadcast isn't as strong as it used to be, and it's very hard to get the word out. And I think that's why a lot of people who are making television are moving to streaming.
Who's one of the big players these days in terms of actors? Bruce Campbell still?
Bruce Campbell, yes. My mind is going blank, but the guy who was in the Insidious movies is pretty big. They put him in just about everything. Bruce Campbell definitely is a good example of a breakthrough horror actor.
Who finds these people?
Who finds these people?
Yeah.
It's the overnight success that takes 25 years, right? I mean, I think it's genre commitment. Why was Vincent Price Vincent Price? It's because he was in 200 crappy movies, and I think that, that kind of genre commitment is what makes the fans love you. And at a certain point, you become indispensable. It's not official until Vincent Price is in it. It's not official until Boris Karloff is in it, because there were so many movies and there was so much commitment. I think the benefit that the old guys had is they got to play Dr. Jekyll and Dr. Frankenstein, and they got to be these kind of all literary and classic characters. I think we need to remake some of those classic horror stories so we can build up these horror stars of today.
Yeah. Was it Patrick Wilson in Insidious?
Yes.
I'll tell you a funny story about him when we come back. Plus, we'll take calls with Mr. Lobo on Coast to Coast AM.